This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
About a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we delve into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me is my co-host Mike from Commentary Track Stars.
Happy New Year!
Yay! 2014!
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to talk about a character, so we'll go back to our general C's. And this one, it's not going to be one of the main characters. It's going to be someone who was only in, what, the first 8 episodes?
Someone who should have been one of the main characters.
Someone who should have been the main one of the main characters. One who obviously was planned to be Janice Rand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeoman Janice Rand.
Yep.
So far, my favorite part in These Are the Voyages is reading that Grace Lee Whitney, the yeomans were always wearing the same outfits that all the guys were wearing in the pilots. And she's like, look, put me in a miniskirt or something. I've got these incredible dancer's legs. You have to show them off. So Grace Lee Whitney is actually responsible for the TOS miniskirt.
God bless Grace Lee Whitney.
I don't understand. Because you assume, you know, I'm sure that you assume that it's, you know, Bill Theiss or Gene Roddenberry. But, or some, you know, sexist man. No, it was Grace Lee Whitney.
Yep. Yep.
And that her and Nichelle Nichols would have battles on who would be showing the most leg.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you can basically see Nichelle's underwear when she's sitting behind Kirk most of the time.
Awesome.
Janice Rand. She's, if you're not sure which character she is, she's the one in the red miniskirt with the beehive hairdo,
mm-hmm.
which I was relieved to find out was wigs.
With the basket weave thing going on in it.
Yeah, the very interesting basket weave. When you think of TOS women's hairstyle, you think of Janice Rand. She's the one who brings Kirk his reports to sign and makes him coffee with a phaser.
Mm-hmm.
Like when there's one episode where the power's minimal, and so she heats up coffee for everybody with a phaser. Like that's impressive.
It is. You kind of wonder what the lasting effects of that would be. I mean, people are concerned about using microwaves now, but whatever.
Phasers must be safer than microwaves.
It's clean energy, right? Yeah, it's gotta be.
But what's interesting is that for being just a random yeoman, or what should be a random yeoman, she was in all of the promotional images, probably because she's attractive, but also maybe because the writers wanted to use her as a kind of, not a foil, but an interest, something that keeps Kirk grounded, like maybe a representation of the crew. Because we see the ship all the time. And to have, you know, this crew member, this yeoman, I think maybe that's the real reason they wanted to keep her around. And also because she's attractive. And, you know, Kirk can maybe flirt with her a little. Because we all love watching Shatner flirt.
Yep. I'd flirt with Shatner. Anyway, it is kind of interesting, and that's something that none of the other Treks really have, is the idea of a crew member who is not part of the senior staff, a crew member who is representative of the average officer, you know, or not even officer, enlisted man or whatever, you know. it's kind of weird. I mean, you see glimpses of that, you know, in other places, you know, probably most famously Lower Decks and Next Generation. But for that to be like a constant presence is never really there, unless you count, say, Chekhov or something like that. But, you know, which I guess you could come to think of it. But, you know, it would be kind of cool to have a character who's just like, look, this is what it's like for us grunts, you know, down on the lower decks. But that kind of went away. And the idea of having like someone, a love interest or whatever for Kirk, and not like a love interest in the sense of a girlfriend, but a love interest in the sense of someone who's, you know, kind of like Moneypenny for Bond, you know?
I was just trying to think of, like, it's like, I can't yeah. think of it. Yes, exactly.
Right. That would have been a really interesting dynamic to have. And it is an interesting dynamic to have in the, how many episodes was she in?
I don't remember. Not very many, not nearly enough. Well, what I like about her is that Janice Rand is not just a, oh, Captain, save me, kind of person. She can hold her own. Like, she's innovative with the phaser heating the coffee. Like, she befriends Charlie X. When Charlie's on board, he's this creepy little teenager, and he obviously has a huge crush on her, and she still takes him under her wing and, you know, shows him around the ship, and even after all that, and then you find out all about his powers, she's still standing up for him and standing up to him. And when he finally just freaks out, he breaks Spock's legs and all this stuff, and he's just like, Janice, I want you. And she's like, nope. And he makes her disappear. Like, you know, had she died right there, she would have died standing up for her principles. And I think that's great. And I'm sure that's not something that was prevalent in the 60s. You know, a strong, independent woman who's, you know, standing up to powerful, godlike children. Okay, maybe she's the only woman in the 60s who had the opportunity to stand up against powerful, godlike children.
But, you know, there may have been others given the opportunity. But for the record, she was on 8 episodes of the original series.
Okay, I was right.
And you're right in that, you know, that was some interesting stuff. And it's unfortunate that she didn't have a chance to expand on that and see, you know, and give us a chance to see how that character would have grown over the course of the series. But that little glimpse that we have is kind of amazing, you know? I mean, like, if you were to show me the first, you know, 10 episodes of the original series and say, okay, what list the cast in order of importance, you know, I'd be like, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Rand. And she's just gone, you know? And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, we'll get into the reasons, the rumors and the actual reasons why she left. Think about Kirk, Enemy Within. We've got evil, drunk, you know, passion Kirk. And he comes to her and he's just like, I want you. And she's like, no. You know, mm-hmm. I know you're the captain, but no. And even when he like tries to force himself on her, she's fighting back. She's not passively doing, she never passively does anything.
Yeah.
Rand is all about no and then taking action.
Mm-hmm.
She's which apparently, I think could have been a great role model for.
Yeah. She's apparently the only one on the ship who thinks that, because even, I think it's Spock at the end was like, you have to admit, yeoman, that the evil, rapey Kirk had some admirable qualities, right? You know what I'm talking about? And she's just like, ew, get away from me. Gross.
Poor Janice.
Yeah, that episode was a little weird, you know, and I know that she's not a big fan of that episode, I think, for that reason, but it's bizarre. Bizarre stuff. But yeah, you know, and it's weird that in the various incarnations and stuff like that, no one has ever sort of latched on to either the character itself or the qualities that the character has, because it seems like it's such a sort of, you know, like grand slam in terms of concept and everything. To just get rid of that is very bizarre. Like, I can't believe that we don't have a replacement Rand, you know, someone who would have stepped in and filled the role that she was providing in those first few episodes, you know, to have, I mean, from just like a marketing standpoint, you'd think they'd be like, oh, we should totally have more hot women on this bridge. But then also from like a character standpoint, you'd think that they'd be like, yes, we do want this dynamic for Kirk. We do need this, you know, this Moneypenny-esque thing. I like, no matter how you look at it, whether it's from a business point of view or from a creative point of view, I don't understand why they wouldn't bring in someone like this, you know, basically a Rand-like character, even if they did want to get rid of Grace Lee Whitney, which it sounds like they didn't, but, you know, whatever. It's very strange that they would just abandon this concept.
One of the reasons that they were, one of the rumors that they were, why they wanted to get rid of her, or why she disappeared, is because the networks didn't like the idea of Kirk having a steady love interest. They wanted him to be the swashbuckling, you know, womanizing Kirk that the cliche is, which is interesting that the networks wanted him to be the cliche he eventually became. So there are hints that they have affection for one another. And not just, you know, rapey bad things. In Balance of Terror, the Romulans are shooting energy beams at the Enterprise. And for some reason, the energy beams take 20 minutes to get to them. So everybody has plenty of time to, like, brace for impact. And Rand braces for impact against Kirk. And Kirk holds her back. Like, not holds her back, but like holds her also. And that's interesting that on the bridge, Kirk would be, he knows that he needs to comfort her, whether or not she is the love interest or the representative of the lower decks.
If I were on that bridge and I needed a brace for impact, I would totally grab Kirk. Totally.
Yeah, you would. I'd grab Rand.
You'd grab Rand? All right.
Yeah.
Well, different strokes for different folks, I guess. But
anyway. I guess so. Also, in Naked Time, when Kirk finally gets infected, he starts rambling on about the ship and how beautiful his yeoman is, and he can't touch her because it's not proper. And then at the end, he, like, sees her on the bridge as he's, you know, still coming down from the high or the sobering up. And he, like, kind of reaches for her, but then, like, you know, pulls back and says, you know, no beach to walk on. He can't. This is the life that he's chosen, and he can't have some of the things that he wants. And Rand is, at least subconsciously, something that he desires, but he knows that he can't have.
Yeah.
Which would have been very interesting to play with, you know, every time Kirk's drunk. Every time Kirk's drunk, he goes after Rand. That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, I mean, like, what you were saying about the studio, you know, and their supposed reasoning for getting rid of her being that, you know, she would be a constant love interest for Kirk, and you wanted Kirk to be, you know, the womanizing, what have you. Yeah, that to me totally reeks of cover story. And I mean, it doesn't make any sense, you know, because we've seen the dynamic in those early episodes. It's not like they would become a couple. It would really be a Moneypenny thing, you know? Yes, there's this guy who goes off and he, you know, hooks up with millions of aliens all around the world or galaxy or whatever it is. And the whole time, right, the one woman who he really wants is the one who's standing next to him on the bridge, and he can't have her. You know, that's a great dynamic, and you can have both of those things, and they don't contradict each other. They support each other, and it would have been amazing. And they totally dropped the ball.
I agree. Another love interesting kind of thing is in Miri, when she finally gets the disease, the Grupp disease, and she goes to Kirk for comfort. And Miri sees this and can plainly see that they care about each other. So she kidnaps Rand, and Kirk freaks out. Of course, he's being affected by the disease too. So he's kind of drunk. And here he is, you know, yelling about, "You better not hurt Janice. I need her." And it's another very telling thing that, you know, he called her by her first name and stuff. There's no... He wants to break down that wall, but he can't. And it's so good, you know, the first 8 episodes with this dynamic that it's missing. And then in like the 9th episode that they did, Dagger of the Mind, I don't know if it was the 9th episode, but the script is originally written that Janice was the one that was going to go down, that they were going to implant in Kirk's mind that he had given into temptation with her during a Christmas party. And that would have changed the whole dynamic. Instead of like, "Hey, you psychiatrist lady, we hooked up, didn't we, at a Christmas party?" Which is embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And very embarrassing.
You know, you look at those first 10 episodes or whatever, you know, and basically before Gene Kuhn shows up, you know, when the story editor was John D.F. Black or you know, I love the stuff that Gene Kuhn has done, and I think probably some of the best episodes of the show were the ones which Kuhn, you know, wrote himself and produced and everything like that. And Trouble with Tribbles, Arena, I mean, both of those, I mean, those are my two favorites, and they're both Kuhn episodes. But whenever I kind of like look at those first few episodes, those first 10 episodes, I kind of wonder, like, if John D.F. Black had been left in charge of that show, and hadn't had studio interference, or maybe even Roddenberry interference, or maybe the Roddenberry interference kept up the way that it was keeping up, I kind of think that it would have been a much more cohesive and ultimately better show. Like, those early episodes are not as good as some of the later ones, but I think, like, if you look at where they were going, I mean, look at all the other shows. The first 10 episodes are never that good. And the first 10 episodes of the original series are some of the best of the series, you know? I wonder, like, if there was an alternate reality where John D.F. Black stayed on that thing and Janice Rand stayed on that thing. Like, is it possible that the original series would have been even better?
It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Like we discussed in the Spock episode, you know, it's entirely possible, but it, you know, the changed dynamic, or the dynamic staying the same in this case, it could have changed everything. Like, yeah. I'm imagining that, I think I see where the networks may have been coming from. I can imagine, you know, scripts being submitted, every script being submitted in slash fiction between Kirk and Rand. And eventually they'd publish one, and then it would be canon, and then they could never go back from it.
Yeah.
And that level of continuity is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
In the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like the Ross and Rachel, like when you're watching a repeat of Friends. You never know if they're together or apart. And for a half hour comedy, that's insane. But for the 60s, it would be even worse.
It's the moonlighting problem.
Mm-hmm. It's the Picard-Beverly problem. There's
mm-hmm.
a lot of examples, even in Star Trek.
Yeah.
The Janeway Chakotay problem. If you want to go to The Journey.
There you go, To the Journey.
So we've danced around it long enough. Why did Grace Lee Whitney leave? Now, we've heard there have been several different rumors. She had a drug problem and needed to go. Or that I'm pretty sure that I read that Gene wouldn't stop hitting on her. Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
Or that the network forced her out because they didn't want the love interest kind of thing to sully their cliche Kirk they wanted to create. What, according to Mark Cushman and These Are the Voyages, is the real reason?
Well, you know, I mean, the way that Mark wrote his book or whatever, he gives everyone a chance to tell their side of the story. And, you know, what the real reason was, who knows, you know. But the thing that does seem to be clear based on memos and everything is that, at least from a production end, you know, Roddenberry and everyone else, no one wanted her to go. It was a network decision or maybe a studio decision. I think a network decision to get rid of her. And from the creative end of things, everyone involved was upset by that. If it had been up to Roddenberry, and I think if it had been up to, definitely if it had been up to Whitney, she would have stayed. So why she left, who knows for sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot. They go into it a lot in the book. You know, Mark goes into it a lot in the book. But, you know, I don't think we'll ever really know for sure. But the fact of the matter is no one wanted her to go. And that, to me, is a shame. That not that they didn't want her to go, but that she ended up having to go, you know?
Well, there is kind of a bright side. She does, Janice Rand does reappear in the movies.
Yeah, she's really
randomly
good as an extra in various scenes.
Yeah, always with different ranks and with different jobs.
She just kind of wanders through the galaxy. She's like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Let me try transporting. Oh, yeah, I'm not good at transporting. When I'm in the transporter room, Vulcans end up dying.
Inside out.
Yeah. Okay, let's try communications. Oh, when I'm a communications officer, whales probe things come and disrupt communications or whatever. I don't know what she was doing in that movie. Oh, let's look at the ship flying into dock where it's going to be decommissioned. Oh, no, the thing is going to be stolen and not decommissioned, and then it's going to blow up. It seems like whatever she touches just, you know, turns out badly, you know?
Well, she did serve on the Excelsior. In Star Trek VI, she was the communications officer. So at least we have...
She went from
transporter chief to communications and
yeah.
Stayed with communications for a bit. And she also got to be in a Voyager episode. So
the pattern continues. No, to the journey.
Hey,
to the journey. To the journey. To the journey. All right. Sorry. That was a joke. Charlene and Tristan, Laurie.
In flashback, she's like the character Tuvok and Janeway have the most interaction with.
Mm-hmm.
And they knock her out and steal her uniform for Janeway to wear. For some reason, because suddenly Tuvok's flashbacks can see that Janeway's there with him. I don't fully understand that episode. We'll have to have a crossover.
Where
Tristan and Charlene explain to us what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's the thing about that the Star Trek VI thing and her being on the bridge. First off, I think it's awesome that they did that, you know, because it's like, finally, yes, let's give her something, you know, substantial to do, or at least as substantial as we can. And since this is the last voyage of this crew and everything like that. And then also just sort of like the whole Sulu thing where it's like, yeah, I mean, like, he knows her. They hang out. They do botany together and everything. So he's like, hey, you know, when I become the captain of my ship and I need a communications officer, I'm going to get her because maybe she'll bring Seymour with or whatever. I don't remember. Or was he the one? Maybe he'll take care of Seymour. Seymour's
right.
There somewhere, right? But
his name wasn't Seymour. It was Beauregard.
Beauregard. Okay, there you go. Beauregard's there somewhere. But regardless...
Seymour.
I don't Seymour's know.
The big plant. Feed me, Seymour.
Okay. Whatever.
And the plant was Audrey, so never mind.
Okay. So I do love the fact that she's on that. And I really, really hope, because it kind of, I find it weird that she isn't in these new movies, but I've always said that my speculation, I'm standing by this, is that when the new show comes out in 2016, which I think it will be an Excelsior show with Sulu as the captain of the Excelsior, and when that happens, they better have Janice Rand on that show. Otherwise, what's the point?
Amen.
Well, I've had fun talking about Janice Rand today. I think we should do it again sometime because she's just that awesome. But this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM. So here's a taste of what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Romulans on TOS.
To be fair, maybe their visual communications were on a different codec. Maybe the original Earth ships were using Skype and the Romulans were using Google+.
Earl Grey.
Generations with Standard Orbit.
And again, I don't know if Mike and Drew would say that Kirk is at his best or not.
No, he's not. But Chekhov is on point.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right? Because there are, like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
There's just a danger that you're going to become like the lower rung of society. And only the people whose parents have the money to enhance them are going to be those who have good lives.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 2 Marathon.
So he starts searching frantically for clues as to what happens when this small rock gets thrown at him. So he kind of ducks, pulls out his phaser, gets ready, and another stone comes flying through, and guess who's throwing it?
It's gotta be the monkey.
Of course it is! Thank you!
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The 4400.
You're describing a scenario in which we watch something and laugh hysterically, that people all around us, everyone we know, will watch us react to this in this way, and they would say, what is wrong with you two?
Warp 5.
Xenophobia and the Coalition of Planets.
Justification in his mind is that the Vulcans were observing us. They knew the war was happening. They didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, it really wasn't the place of the Vulcans to step in and stop World War III.
Literary Treks.
James Swallow, The Poison Chalice.
Everybody in this story is dragged into a situation they don't want to be in. And that's kind of where the title, The Poison Chalice, originally came from, is the idea that, you know, Riker is given this promotion, which on paper sounds like a really great idea, but it's a poison chalice. You know, it turns out that it's not what he thought it was. And in fact, you know, he's being dragged into something that he doesn't want to be involved in.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. So let's tell everyone where they can contact us if they want to share their thoughts on Janice Rand or Star Trek or anything. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email, and you can use the tab on the right-hand side of the page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. Give us your impression of, Janice Rand, and your impression of her as a character, or your impression of Grace Lee Whitney.
Either way,
whichever.
I'm fine with it.
And then you can talk to us or other listeners at our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where else can people find you outside of the Standard Orbit?
Oh, you can find me slightly outside of Standard Orbit on Trek FM still, doing commentary Trek Stars with my friend Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Track Stars off topic with Max and our friend Brandon, Or you can find me on Twitter at ComTrackStars.
Or on Commentary Frackstars, coming soon coming, to an audio podcast near you.
Coming really freaking soon, man.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on various other shows around the Star Trek Network, as I am the TOS editor. And maybe you can find me on Commentary Frackstars or CTS to 1.
Definitely on CTS to 1.
Both of our theoretical podcast shows, the CTS to 1 about aspect ratios.
Mm-hmm.
It's thrilling.
This is the problem that I have. I've heard other people say this before too. It's like you come up with a title for a podcast and you're like, I want to do that just so that I can use the title. And I have now, thanks to you, jerk, three titles that I need to use, and I don't have time to do any of these podcasts.
What's the third one?
The third one is one which I wanted to call Commentary Track Stars from the very beginning, which was Analog Track 1, which goes back to Laserdiscs, because, you know, on Laserdiscs you had the digital tracks and the analog tracks, and, you know, they would always put the audio commentaries on Analog Track 1. So we'd call it Analog Track 1 with the tagline, audio commentaries can be found on Analog Track 1, which is what it says on the back of every single Laserdisc. And like two people would have been like, that's the most amazing thing ever. But Max wouldn't let me do it because he's like, everyone will think we're just talking about technical stuff.
That's true.
But I do. If you go to analogtrack1.com, it'll take you to Commentary Track Stars. Just saying. Hell
you
yes,
bought the
I
domain?
Did. Hell yes.
Oh.
Copyright me again.
Fantastic.
And now I need to go off and buy Commentary Frack Stars. Thank you very much.
All right. Before we go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor, who makes it possible for us to bring Standard Orbit and our other shows to you each week. Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There are numerous classic TOS books on Audible, as well as some of the all-time favorites like Prime Directive and Federation. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. Also, if you would like to personally support Standard Orbit, the network, and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed badges and art prints as a thank you for your contribution, and you can mix and match badges and art prints. There are different levels of donation to choose from, and your contributions help us cover the cost of productions, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring Standard Orbit and our other shows to you every week. So that was Janus Rand, at least the first time we talk about Janus Rand.
Yeah. I think we can talk about her again sooner or later. But, yeah, missed opportunities. Opportunities. Probably the biggest missed opportunity in all of the original series, if you ask me.
Agreed. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.